Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
David Cobb covers college basketball and college football for CBS Sports. He's on X at David W. Cobb, and he joins me now via the phone line. David, how's it going?
Hey, Gabe, it's going well. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I hear there's an opening at ESPN. Are you going to put your name in the bucket to replace Adrian Wojnarowski over there as the ESPN NBA insider?
I would, but man, the paternity leave that I'm about to get at CBS is real nice.
Yeah.
I get 12 weeks, man. I don't need to make you jealous because I know you they ain't going to let you off the air for 12 weeks. I know that. But, man, you know, I think I'm good. I don't want to be woed, man. That guy's got three cell phones going off at all hours of the night. Like, I'm okay.
Yeah. Getting woken up at 3 a.m. for an Isaac Okoro three-year, $38 million contract, you don't want to do that? That's not in your plans?
The final straw. Yeah, right. This has got to be the final straw for Woj. I'd be psyched, though, if I were a local beat writer. Because, man, when I was on the Grizzlies beat, and part of this was just I was new to the NBA game. I'd come from a college beat. It takes a long time to build sources and develop trust. But even well-established NBA beat writers who have been covering teams on a local level for a decade or more, struggling to break news in this era because Woj and Shams have just made a monopoly of it. And obviously Shams is still around, but if I were a local guy, I'd actually be kind of psyched to see Woj exiting. But I think it's fascinating, isn't it, that he's going to go work at St. Bonaventure as a general manager? I mean, that is a very, very interesting move.
I think the Bonnie should be really happy about that. I think he'll do really well in that role.
He knows personnel, negotiations.
He's as plugged in as possible.
Agents, without a doubt. And there's so much overlap in the agency space now between the NBA and college games that he's clearly already got all the connections and network that he needs to have. And if he's willing to chip in some of his own dough to help pay for the players, then, hey, maybe this could propel the Bonnies to a new golden age.
Well, I don't know if he needs to chip in any of his dough. He's probably taking a massive pay cut. You know what I mean? He's got a nice, as they call it in the Pac-12, a war chest that he's sitting on, but I don't know if he needs to come out of pocket because I don't think that the GM job's going to be nearly as high paying.
So, you know, I talked to Woj one time in L.A. when the Grizzlies were playing against the Lakers, and we ran into, you know, we were in the same media meal line or something, and I introduced myself and told him I worked for the commercial appeal in Memphis, and he told me he applied for a job at the CA back in the day. And
what?
Don't quote me on this. I'm serious. And, like, somebody beat him out for the job, like somebody we all know. And anyway, I just thought that was hilarious, right? Like,
beat Woj out for the job originally?
I don't think it was that job.
Okay, it's a different one.
Because I don't want to say whose job it was because I don't.
Right.
It was like 5 years ago, and so we're out there in L.A. And I mean, very personable. It's obvious why he was so good at what he did because even little old me, you know, rookie Grizzlies beat writer, he was just making small talk, made me feel like we were just, you know, pals or whatever, you know. And so obviously that ability to build relationships.
That's so wild. We were that close to having Woj in town covering Memphis sports. Imagine him covering like Memphis football. That would have been fun.
Right, I know, and you know, but it's like, yeah, anyway, that's wild.
That's crazy. I've never heard that before.
True.
Yeah, you just dropped some knowledge on me. You broke some news. You broke some news. You hit, that was a cop bomb. Speaking of bombs that may drop here soon, Pac-12, we know Memphis is involved, and the Pac-12 is having a midweek meeting about Memphis and Tulane. This is happening fast. This is happening right before ours. There's still some Memphis fans that are holding out. But what would you say to those fans? Like, I mean, how do you feel, I guess, ultimately right now about where this could head and Memphis potentially, you know, having that West Coast footprint in the Pac-12?
Well, there's been some developments on the ACC front within the last 36 hours that make the Pac-12 move seem a little bit more like the right option. And it's basically this. Florida State and Clemson may be willing to negotiate with the ACC on a deal that would make it sweeter for them to stay. And if Florida State and Clemson stay, then the ACC is not shopping. So the likelihood or the probability of the ACC holding together is higher now than it was 4 or 5 days ago when we first started hearing about this Pac-12 stuff. So that changes the calculus. You got to be nimble here. I was cool on this at first, not thinking obviously that the Pac-12 thing was all that much of an upgrade and that you might be better off holding out for the ACC to have some openings. It looks less likely that the ACC is going to have openings now as of today than it did just a few days ago. And because of that reality, I think you got to look at the Pac-12 thing a little more seriously.
One thing that we haven't really discussed previously is the bowl tie-ins on the college football side. You know, the Pac-12 compared to the American. It's not even a comparison, is it? I don't know if you've seen these numbers, but like the lowest paying, the lowest payout for a bowl game in the Pac-12 is the Independence Bowl right now at $2.2 million, and the highest is $2.0 million in the Military Bowl for the American. The bowl tie-ins at this current moment, and obviously that could change going into the future, but the bowl tie-ins are something we need to put at the forefront here as well. There's a lot more money involved.
Right, that's true, and I've also kind of come around on what the Pac-12 could be in basketball. So that's, yep. I think, another element that works in Memphis's favor, because it's obviously no secret that the AAC is creeping dangerously close to one-bid territory on the basketball side. And then if you look at the teams that might be in this Pac-12, you do have some teams, some schools with a little bit of a basketball history. The Mountain West schools have done well for themselves in terms of making the NCAA tournament in recent years. Obviously, Colorado State, Boise State, both teams that have reached the big dance in recent years. So I think it would be a better basketball league too. And you know, in addition to obviously being better in football with the bowl tie-ins and just overall. So yeah, it's not the power conference jump that Memphis fans have long pined for, but it's an upgrade. And if you don't think that something better is going to come along, then go with the upgrade.
Now, truth-telling time, I do hate the fact that we're in college football season. We're moving on to week 4, and we have realignment news right now. It does bother me. We had Colton Denning on, who I bring on every week, on Wednesday, and he basically said he compared it to water in his sock. He's like, getting realignment news during the season's like getting water in your sock. You just can't get it up out of there. You know, it is frustrating to have all this football on right now, to want to focus on that with the Pac-12 trying to completely, you know, fix themselves, right the wrongs of the past.
Right, but they got nothing better to do. They don't have a conference right now. The Pac-12 isn't playing football. They've outsourced their Pac-2, their two-pack, to the Mountain West and the WCC for basketball. So it's like, well, they don't have anything better to do. They got to get this thing figured out. So I understand why they're working on it and why they're wanting to hold meetings and why they're getting aggressive, because this is their offseason. This is the winter of their league, and they can't just sit around and wait for the spring and wait for the NCAA tournament to end. Like, if they're going to survive, they got to get on it, and they're getting on it.
Speaking of surviving or not surviving, Billy Napier is not going to survive. After last week watching him against Texas A&M, that was really, really bad, and they already had their Board of Trustees meeting. They're going to go to Mississippi State this week, and certainly if they lose that game, I'd imagine him getting fired right after, but I'd imagine he's going to get fired midseason anyway. It does feel like the fan base has a lot more urgency to get him out of there than the athletic department does at this moment, and I think that makes a little bit of sense. But where do you see this going? It feels like there's going to be some hoops to jump through, and one that we have not talked about very very notably with Florida making this switch is the calendar. The calendar, the early signing period this year for 2024 is December 4th through 6th. And the first round of the playoff is December 20th and 21st, and a lot of the names that they're going to want to get involved with could potentially be in the playoff. Eli Drinkwitz, Dan Lanning, Lane Kiffin. If they want that big fish, it feels like it's going to be really hard to go get it.
And Dan Mullen's not doing anything. I mean, no. He's on the ESPN set.
Yeah. I don't know if they or he want that anymore. I don't know if that's going to work out.
Hey, I'm saying it don't look so bad in hindsight. Yeah,
sure.
When you look back at What is it? No, but it's this. I'll give you one. Washington might not even be in a bowl game, and Jed Fish has never stayed anywhere long. And Jed Fish has ties to Florida, and he cut his teeth under Steve Spurrier, and Florida holds a special place in his heart. And that man can coach ball, and you pair him with the resources of Florida, that offensive mind, ooh, buddy. I mean, that could be special. Like what he did at Arizona, sure. He showed that he's got high level coaching chops. And you know, he left them. He had his quarterback of the future, and Noah Fifita, and he said, I'm going to Washington. I'm going to the Big Ten. And he's off to a rough start there. He's got a big rebuild ahead of him. He jumps to Florida, gets some guys out of the portal. Maybe he's able to keep DJ Lagway. I think Jed Fish might see a quicker runway to success at Florida, even with having to restart again, than he has at Washington in that brutal Big Ten now, where he's essentially starting from scratch. So, hey, oh, by the way, if DJ Lagway does transfer, who says that Noah Fifita sticks it out at Arizona? This is all very hypothetical, Gabe, but – you asked the question. I think it would make a lot of sense for both sides if Florida and Jed Fish came together, and that would eliminate your worries over the timing. He would be there in time to see the early signing period, and Washington is most likely not even going to be in a bowl, let alone the college football playoff.
Yeah, now here's my name, and it's Glenn Schumann from Georgia, because I think it's more likely that you can go get a D.C., you know, a sitting D.C. than a sitting head coach that'll be in the playoff. And I'd imagine Georgia's going to be in the playoff. Glenn Schumann, of course, their D coordinator. What do you think about that name?
Is he ready to go to a program of that caliber right out of the chute? I mean, if you really believe in the Dan Lanning trajectory there, then maybe you look at Glenn Schumann as Dan Lanning 2.0. He's that young, hot, 30-something coordinator who's worked under Kirby Smart, been a part of national titles. But, boy, going from working under Kirby Smart to having your first head coaching job at Florida, that's a massive jump. Dan Lanning was able to do it, but Dan Lanning might just be special. And then you got to worry about getting into this trap now with Kirby Smart that everybody got into with Nick Saban over the years. You know, everybody thought Will Muschamp was going to be a great head coach because, boy, he worked for Nick Saban. Everybody thought Billy Napier was going to be a great head coach at Florida because – yeah, he's shown it at Louisiana, but he's got those Saban ties. He worked for Saban at Alabama. I mean, need I remind everybody of Derek Dooley? I mean, the list goes on. There are a lot of guys who are not cut out to be head coaches just because they work for the GOAT. And if you're banking on Glenn Schumann being a great head coach, it's because he worked for the GOAT. So that's kind of where I come down now. Maybe that's your to me. He's a fourth or a fifth option.
Holler at me. Give me sort of your Heisman short list right now. Just curiously.
That's tough.
Quinn Ewers being out may hurt him too. You know, so that would have been a name that's been involved.
Yeah, Ewers would be a name. I mean, heck, if he don't come back, I mean, he will. But Arch Manning.
Yeah, he looked pretty damn good.
In all seriousness, let's see what Miller Moss does at Michigan this week. He's somebody that I'm looking at because of the track record that Lincoln Riley has of producing Heisman Trophy quarterbacks. That is pretty much indisputable. He's looked pretty good through two games. Now he goes on the road to the Big House. Massive, massive test. If Miller Moss has a prolific sort of game, then, you know, maybe he ends up in that conversation. But I'll also say this, man. Jalen Milroe looked really freaking good against Wisconsin in terms of the ability to generate explosive plays. He did it with his legs. He did it with his arm. He's going to be right there in the mix of this, too. As is, now that you got me rolling, Jackson Dart, the numbers are ridiculous. They are absurd. And that's largely a product of the competition that Ole Miss has faced. But I still think at season's end, you know, we're going to be looking at some record-setting type of production there from Jackson Dart as well.
Yeah, and again, I know that people are going to do a deep sigh because this is a pipe dream and I don't see it happening. But I'm sorry, I cannot overlook Travis Hunter and what he's doing. This is the Shohei Ohtani of college football. And I know we don't get a bunch. We have not had since Paul Hornung. We haven't had a Heisman from a losing team. And Colorado may be on the track to have a losing record. And if they don't, they'd be 6-6 and just barely getting into a bowl game. But it's so hard for me to leave him out of this conversation. What he did at Colorado State last weekend was just amazing. 13 catches, 100 yards, 2 TDs, 5 tackles, a PBU, and a 38-yard interception return. It's. I mean, we just. at some point, I feel like we do have to appreciate that, and I'd imagine it should land him in New York. I'm not saying he has to win it, but I think he has to get consideration, no?
That's fair. The way you prefaced that question, I thought you were going to suggest Seth Hennigan.
And No. Definitely not. Not that.
I'd be like, man, you know, he's having a great year, but let's cool it. So glad that's not the direction you're going, but spot on about Travis Hunter. It's rare now that a non-quarterback wins the Heisman Trophy. We don't see it often. Devontae Smith from Alabama at receiver, he was kind of the last non-quarterback that I can remember in the last, you know, recent memory. And the last time you had a defensive player, which obviously Travis Hunter plays offense as well, but – you know, you got to go way, way, way back for that. To me, it's ultimately going to come down to what kind of season does Colorado end up with? If they go 7-5 or 8-4, he's very much in the mix. If they become as irrelevant this season as they were in the second half of last season, then I think it's a lot harder for Travis Hunter because he's just going to get overlooked and all these college football playoff quarterbacks are going to rise to the top. But dude, he's special. It's crazy. He might be the best college football player of our lifetime. I mean, he's that good. And I stand by my assertion that he can play both ways in the NFL.
Yeah, I don't know about 100-some-odd snaps, but, I mean, it's sure. A guy like – I remember, you know, when we talk about Charles Woodson or Champ Bailey, we knew they were going to play DB. We don't know that about Travis Hunter. We don't know which side of the ball that NFL, you know, front offices are actually thinking about playing him at.
How do you pick? He's so good at both of them. He's one of the absolute clear-cut best wide receivers in the country, and he's maybe the best cover corner in college football. So if you're an NFL franchise, you're leaving something on the table there. If you don't at least utilize him on both sides of the ball. Again, like you say, you don't have to play him 100 snaps per game at the next level. That's not sustainable, especially when you're talking about an 18-game NFL season, potential playoffs, things like that. He's, you know, he's still wiry. He's not the most strong framed guy out there. And that's another thing that I worry about this year is him getting worn down as this season goes along.
Yeah.
Playing in a physically demanding Big 12 because Colorado is entering a new league, and the Big 12 hangs its hat on physical football now, and he's got to survive that. And if he does it, then yeah, I'm with you. He should be there in New York because there's just nobody else like him.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny, and we're going to really get into the weeds here because I think it's an interesting conversation that not a lot of people are having. I think historically when you have guys like this, you skew them to the defensive side of the ball, and you may give them a couple of plays on offense a game, something like that. That's how it's been. We've never seen it the other way around, but with the influx of more nickel and dime, you know, personnel and packages – at the NFL level, I feel like you can utilize him the other way around where you give him a bunch of offensive snaps and still find a way to give him a few snaps on the defensive side of the ball. We've just never really seen that, though. Isn't that strange?
That is interesting. The idea that you would only be on the field for a few snaps on the defensive side. Because, yeah, it's always the specialty package. Like, oh, well, you know, here's the specialty package now for – you know, whatever the athlete is who comes in and runs a few plays on the offensive side of the ball. Yeah, why is that? I don't know. You tell me, Gabe. I mean, why would it be more difficult to only play a minimal role on the defensive side versus doing that on offense?
I honestly have played a lot of football. I've coached football. I've seen athletes that can do both. I don't know why that's the case. I really don't have an answer for that. I need someone a little smarter than me. You know, I need Bill Belichick to tell me why that's the case or something like that, or Nick Saban.
You just call up Dan Lanning. He would answer after two rings for you. Yeah. He would answer after two rings because Gabe Kuhn was calling him. And then you could put that sound on the air.
Yeah, yeah. Now, final thing I want to bring up, Tennessee versus Oklahoma. Everybody's going to talk about the Michigan and USC game. I am really looking at Tennessee this week, and if Tennessee can do what I think they can do to Oklahoma and they continue to look dominant like they looked against North Carolina State winning 51-10, I really am going to put them in my national championship contender conversation. I know that, you know, people are going to be hesitant to do that, but if they can wipe the floor on the road, Oklahoma, I feel really good about this Tennessee team.
Yeah, Yeah, it all depends on the margin of victory in a lot of ways. How dominant do they look? If they wipe the floor with Oklahoma, then absolutely. If they win but don't cover the touchdown spread, then it's I'm not there yet.
Right.
So how much of what we've seen from Tennessee so far is legit? Or how much of it is the fool's gold of playing three really, really overmatched opponents with a system that is designed to accelerate leads? And yep. You know, when you can't sustain a drive against Tennessee and you put the ball back in the hands of a Tennessee offense that's getting in rhythm, it's a snowball effect. And that snowball effect has been on full display in their first three games. But if Oklahoma is able to move the chains and Oklahoma is able to force a couple of three and outs, then all of a sudden Tennessee is out of rhythm and facing an adversity on the road that Nico has not faced, that team has not faced this season. And so that's what Oklahoma is capable of doing, because they are far and away the best defensive team that Tennessee has played with Nico at quarterback. And so, you know, that's what it kind of comes down to, is can Oklahoma hold Tennessee under 30? And if they can do it, they've at least got a chance. They've got a chance. But, sure, I mean, Tennessee looks so dominant, so good, so in command of every situation that I am picking Tennessee to win and to cover. And if that happens, then the hype train's going to be out of control.
Yep.
And with as vulnerable as Georgia looked, as shaky as Alabama looked against South Florida, I mean, you know, Texas kind of having some injury questions there at quarterback, like, yeah, you could talk me into putting Tennessee in that upper tier.
Yep. By the way, real quick, the 10% talent fee that they're putting on tickets proposed by Danny White, what do you think of that? My big thing is, like, I get you have to keep up with the times, but I hate the fact that we ask the middle class, we ask, like, the working class to foot the bill for NIL and for extra scholarships. That's a little much for me.
Dude, it's getting ridiculous, and I'm not blaming Danny White. Like, he's trying to strike while the iron's hot. Tennessee fandom is at an all-time high. This is the week to come out with it. You're 3-0. Everybody's in love with everything you're doing. You want a baseball natty. Basketball's got it going. You know, just do it now. Like go ahead and release that information now. But you know, and he's forward-thinking. He's a great AD. He's one of the very highest paid in his field now for a reason. But to the bottom line, what you're getting at, it does. It stinks. Being a college sports fan is ridiculously expensive now, and it's not going to change, because even though this is coming in-house, the revenue sharing, and it's not going to be donating to a third-party collective anymore, they're still going to be squeezing every single last penny out of the fans, and now it's just going to be the school itself doing that instead of the collective. And so you're going to see a lot of other schools do very similar types of things.
Yeah, it's wild, though. But, David, I appreciate it, man. Enjoy your weekend. Or, well, actually, we'll talk on Friday. We'll talk on Friday, so I'll tell you to enjoy your weekend then. But appreciate you joining.
Yep, sounds good. Thanks, man.
Yes, sir. That's David Cobb, college basketball, college football writer at CBS Sports on X at David W. Cobb. He's brought to you by Oxbow every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Family-owned and operated retail store, 964 June Road is where you can find them. Off Poplar on June Road behind the Amoco Station. Let me point you in the direction of the best clothing in town. Genteel, Free Fly, Fair Harbor, Duckhead, Mizzen, and Main are the brands that they carry, and they carry your favorite team. So if you're trying to look styling and profiling when you show up to go tailgate at the Grove or at Tiger Lane, go get your Memphis gear. Go get that polo. Go get that Ole Miss polo, that Tennessee polo, that Alabama polo. They have it all right there at 964 June Road off Poplar on June Road behind the Amoco Station. And if you need tailgating gear, they have that cups, coolers, koozies, tumblers, and the best brands, Arctic and Yeti as well. And you can get all this stuff online right there at shopoxbow.com. Again, shopoxbow.com. That's OXBEAU, shopoxbow.com. And use my promo code when you go to check out The Gabe Show, all caps, no spaces, The Gabe Show. You get 20% off your online order. But whether you're going online or in-store to 964 June Road, remember to shop local, shop Oxbow. Now we need to go ahead and grab a break. When we come back, we'll get to a trip around the National Football League right here on The Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Back in on The Gabe Kuhn Show, we have a little bit of an abbreviated version, but we're going to hop into the trip around the National Football League. Connor, hit it. All right, let's start with Justin Jefferson. This is good for my fantasy team. Justin Jefferson is on track to play this Sunday versus the Texans. Now, he has a quad issue, but it looks like he participated in the walkthrough today, and we'll see what happens. But I do like, and I talked about it yesterday, the Vikings, Kevin O'Connell, you know, looking at him out of the Shanahan tree, they have been playing some really good offense in the early season. They're 2-0, and Sam Darnold is delivering the ball to Justin Jefferson. But if he loses him, it could get a little bit spooky, let's be honest. To just Jordan Addison out there and all these other guys. You need Justin Jefferson out there to really put a defense in a bind. So he is on track to play this Sunday against the Texans, but we shall see as the week progresses.
Is he on your 9-2-9 team?
Yep.
I think you should take the week off.
I think that was my first. We're playing each other, aren't we?
I personally, I think it would be a safety hazard if Justin Jefferson.
Of course, that's your take.
Yeah,
of course, that's your take.
I'm thinking of the players first.
Hey, what's our projection, real quick? I know projections don't mean much, but who is projected to win right now between us?
Unfortunately, me. I always feel like when you're projected to win, you never win.
So let's see. I'm going to do this really quick. Okay. You are projected 133 to my 126. I have three guys questionable though, so I might have to make some moves. But I'm gonna kick your ass. I'm coming for you this week.
I hope not.
I'm gonna go to 2-1. You're 1-1 as well?
I'm 1-1.
Okay.
Yeah, I beat Brad Carson last week.
Okay, we're pacing. So even though we talked about Bryce Young already getting benched, and then they put in Andy Dalton and he's gonna start for what looks like probably the majority of the year, the Panthers have made it very clear. They're not going to trade Bryce Young. That's the news of the day. They're not going to trade their number one overall pick from 2 years ago, Bryce Young. This is not a surprise. I don't even know why this is a news drop. But it also does beg the question, if they're not going to do anything with him, why is he sitting behind Andy Dalton like you asked earlier in the show? I guess there's some reasons. Maybe they don't want to lose any more confidence, but I think benching him makes him lose confidence in general. This is just a dumpster fire, but it doesn't surprise me. It's the Carolina Panthers under David Tepper. He is an embarrassment, and until he sells that franchise, I don't see them having any type of success. I'm sorry. I know that it's hard. It's ridiculous all the time to blame it on an owner, but the proof is in the pudding. They have the most losses. They have the worst record since he took over as owner. He's made helped facilitate some of the worst trades. He's had a couple of GMs, a couple of head coaches, just a revolving door of personnel, a revolving door of players, and it leads to terrible results. I think we have the sound pulled up. So if you'll remember, I know the Falcons beat the Eagles on Monday Night Football, because Saquon Barkley dropped a ball, and then Drake London had the catch on the out route in the end zone on Darius Slay. But then, if you'll remember, he had the personal foul that backed up the extra point. We were kind of worried, okay, is their kicker going to make it or not? But he was sort of shooting into the air. That's why he got the personal foul. I didn't like the personal foul call. I didn't like the flag being thrown. But Raheem Morris was asked about the supposed quote-unquote gun celebration. This is what he had to say. Raheem. Well, Raheem was backing him up anyway. A t-shirt cannon. That's what that was.
I kind of love it.
Well,
ridiculous. I'm like, buy it.
I've never seen a t-shirt automatic t-shirt cannon. Easy for me to say. But I've never seen an automatic one. That's sort of what he was doing.
Yeah.
That's sort of what he was doing.
The only automatic t-shirt gun I've ever seen is the thing that they have at the Grizzlies games when they bring it out and it shoots it into the stands. But it's not a gun. It's like a pedestal thing where they fire it in, but yeah,
You usually have to reload the t-shirt cannon.
No, it's got like six cylinders, you just hold down.
You don't have
no,
to.
No. I think they push a button.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, but it's not handheld.
Yeah, but that is the definition of telling your story.
He's
a great kid. He was shooting. It was a t-shirt cannon. I don't know what you guys are getting all hot and bothered about.
Listen, Drake London won me a fantasy game, so. It was a t-shirt gun.
Yeah, I hear you.
I stand by him.
I hear you. And they still made the extra point, so it was all good.
Everything's forgiven.
Now, Robert Irwin Jewelers is the number one place to buy diamond engagement rings. And the reasons that is the case, they have more choices. They have an enormous collection of natural lab-grown diamonds in all shapes and sizes. They make custom designing your engagement ring risk-free and easy. You can ask questions. There's no dumb questions. They know it is a big, big decision that you're making. So they will take care of you. And you have peace of mind with the Meant to Be guarantee. You can buy your loose diamond and custom-made engagement ring. And if you get it at Robert Irwin Jewelers, you have 365 days to return it. So if you guys break up, hope that doesn't happen, or if she doesn't like it, you can go ahead and bring it back and find something else. You can have it your way. You bring in a picture or a drawing. They can make that diamond engagement ring come to life. So also on top of that, free ring sizing for life. You gain or lose weight, they handle it for you. Free jewelry spa service for life, so they will keep all of that sparkling jewelry that you bought at Robert Irwin Jewelers bright and sparkling like the day that you bought it. And you can ask her now and pay later with financing like 24-month deferred interest. Take up to 60 months to pay at a low APR. Get over to Robert Irwin Jewelers. They have 4 decades in this business, and they always take care of you. Howie and his team are great, and they are just A-plus people. So get over to Robert Irwin Jewelers. But instead of, you know, I mean, there's other things that you can go buy jewelry for. It doesn't have to just be a diamond engagement ring. You could have a new job, new pet mom, retirement, sobriety, weight loss, a push present. I'm going to have to get into that soon. And it could be a participation trophy. Doesn't matter. Anniversary. Make sure you get over to Robert Irwin Jewelers. 3 locations, South Haven, Bartlett, and the Diamond Showroom at Perkins Extended. Or you can go online at rijewelers.com. Bigger, better diamonds, better prices. Robert Irwin Jewelers. Now let's go ahead and wrap up hour number 2. Coming up next, we'll get into Small Talk right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. And Small Talk is brought to you by Conway Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. If you haven't seen it by now, it looks like there's 2 new jersey leaks for the Memphis Grizzlies coming up for the 24-25 season. The first is their city edition, and it's reminiscent of what they used to wear as an alternate in the grit and grind era, but it's a red jersey with blue trim, and they're going to have Memphis in sort of
Sounds.
The Sounds,
yeah,
font.
Yeah.
I really like this one. This is one that I've been wanting to get back in the rotation for a long, long time. And the fact that it's the City Edition, with how watered down the City Edition jerseys for every single franchise have gotten, this is going to probably be one of the best.
It's one of the better ones for sure. You can see a full list. Nike or Nice Kicks on X has a full, you know, lineup of them. And my opinion is I do like these jerseys, and I like the Grizzlies jerseys that they've shown. We've got to let's take a few years off. Like, we're running out of ideas.
That's what I'm saying.
Some of these are just the same idea, just slightly different.
And some of them are just gross.
The Celtics one is terrible.
Yes. It's
awful.
The Denver Nuggets one with the 5,280 on it instead of the Nuggets.
Yeah.
But come on. Like, it's just all the ideas have been stepped on and they're getting lame. You can't do it every single year. You know,
don't do it every year.
The equipment department runs out of ideas after a while.
Right.
I mean, it's kind of ridiculous, but I'm glad they're going back to this one. This is very reminiscent of the Sounds, and it's pretty nice. The other one that they have is the away version of the old Vancouver jerseys, the white version of the Vancouver jerseys, which I honestly love that style. I'm not saying I want them to go back fully, but those jerseys are fresh as all get out. If I go buy one, that's the style I'm going to get, is the old Vancouver font and the old Vancouver style.
Yeah. Yeah, especially with the shorts. If the shorts look like they're supposed to and they have the old logo on the side, all for those.
All
yeah,
right.
But the Vancouver jerseys are pretty
full,
sick.
I mean, just generally speaking, I know you have to sort of change maybe the colorway to like make the Grizzlies your own here in Memphis. I love the old colorway a lot better than what they have.
Than now?
Yeah. Than now. I mean, I think everybody's there with the, what's that, teal? Is it teal? I'm not good with colors. But teal, red, white, and black, I think that's the look that I would honestly appreciate every single game, much less, you know.
I wouldn't mind a shakeup of the court and of the style of the Grizzlies right now. I wouldn't mind it.
You know, I know the Vancouver Grizzlies were not very good, but they did have the whole...
They had the style.
They had the style,
hey,
right.
They may not have been good, but they look good.
They had the style correct. I still see people walking around in old Mike Bibby jerseys, man. I still see it.
I have Vancouver gear.
Yeah. Yeah. I get that. But I like these two. This is well done by the equipment department.
The Grizzlies have done well with their city edition jerseys.
Yeah, but okay, I need to see the rest of these city editions. Are they really as bad as you're telling me
now? No, they're not bad. They're not bad. They're just, some of them are just retreads of things that they've done in the past. Some of them are very bad, but
Raptors is pretty cool.
The Raptors is cool, but like at the same time, there's a lot of like space on that jersey. I feel like they should have centered it.
The Heat,
it's off to the
Heat,
side a little
the
bit.
Heat, the Heat are going to do the Heat culture thing every year.
Yeah,
that
stinks.
Golden
State's is bad.
The
Golden State's is bad. Minnesota's is bad.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Lakers is fine.
The Knicks just added a shadow to New York.
I like the Knicks one, though.
The Jazz is good. The Jazz is well done.
Brooklyn's a lot. I like the Hawks a lot.
San Antonio, you've got the old school ABA looking jersey. Looks like you should be wearing, like, you've seen the movie Semi-Pro. It looks like that's the jersey they had then. But it's just you run out of ideas.
Utah's is
nice.
But yeah, it's basically like the Kings is terrible. There's a lot of them that just they don't have any ideas.
I'm just coming around to the Celtics one.
Celtics is dog ass. It's terrible.
What is that?
It's bad. It's really bad.
That looks like something they should be wearing in overtime. That looks like a G League jersey. And it's like an off green.
I'm not kidding. It looks like an intramural jersey that you would have for like your church basketball.
What is that?
It's bad. What is that?
Seriously.
It's awful. It's awful.
Also, I don't know if they should go this direction like with like the original brands of the NBA and like the oldest brands. They shouldn't make them do a city edition every single year.
I have had the opinion for a very long time that every sport should go back to their 90s logos and leave it be. Just leave it be.
Some of them are great.
We hit the highest heights of logos in the 90s, and then we lost the plot afterwards. This whole like clean look that everything tries to have, not for it. Bring back the color. Bring back the color. Bring back the style. Let them wear their own jerseys in the All-Star games, damn it.
Best ones are the ones that have been released, though. I think the Grizzlies, and I like the Raptors. I really do.
I do.
It's the big Raptor doing a
Vince Carter.
Vince Carter between the legs windmill dunk.
Mm-hmm.
I think
from the dunk
good.
Contest.
But all the other ones are just kind of meh.
I like Brooklyn's.
Yeah.
I like Cleveland. Cleveland's isn't bad. Some of them are just kind of boring.
But Brooklyn's got just sort of the camo look. Like, what is that even?
Well, it's Biggie Smalls.
Okay. I can dig that, I guess. And they're a little more colorful.
Minnesota's isn't very good. Minnesota's looks like the early 2000s version of what the future would look like. Do you know what I'm saying? Like that, I don't know. I don't like it. It makes me feel weird when I look at it. I don't like it. I know that they're going for the
lake. It doesn't give me that warm and fuzzy
feeling.
They're
going for like the lake stuff, but like the Prince things that they were doing was incredible. Why did you go away from that?
Yeah.
Like Minnetonka.
But again, coming up with every single year, coming up with a new jersey, that's tough.
I could do better than this, though.
Yeah. Now let's go ahead and get into the third hour. And we're going to transition back into some college football, some NFL with my guy, good friend, former safety at the University of Oregon, former safety for the Miami Dolphins, Verone McKinley III. He will join right after this break.